Not quite. I wanted to speak a little bit about japa and this class we called the foundational principle of powerful japas, foundational principles. Don't tell. And it's so hard to speak to. Very, very simple, the message that we would like to tell you about, this most foundational principle about japa, and that is that right now, and while we're chanting out japa, we have to become determined, not we have to, but if we want to chant good japa, we have to become determined that we don't have anything else to do right now. Now, our lives are filled with so many activities, and those activities sit in the mind like seeds. They begin with the mind's desires, and especially if one has tinges of the motive passion within oneself, this is the symptom of a mind that has passion. It is filled with desires. How many desires? Countless desires. And the more we try to satisfy our countless desires, they multiply exponentially. They increase and increase and increase, because it's not possible to satisfy our desires on the material level. It is essential for spiritual life to be seriously prosecuted that we accept this point. It came out in the pastime of when Bali Maharaj is giving charity, because this is the glory of a king, of every householder, actually, is giving charity, giving, because the tendency is so natural to take and want to accumulate and want to collect, especially kings, because they had so much power and they were gathering, collecting from all the citizens, percentage-wise. They had to give, otherwise they would think that this is mine. And that fact, that this is mine, will be disproven at the time of death when we cannot take anything with us. These are obvious points. So the mind in passion tends to fill itself with countless desires. I want this, I need this, I require this, and if only I had this. And I want, and I want, and I want, and I want. And the mind, tinged with the motive ignorance, doesn't want much. It's getting quite comfortable, actually. We can always find somehow or another. Or, and what is the result of ignorance? It's deeper ignorance, not only sleeping, but all kinds of intoxications. All kinds of intoxication when desires are increased in their intensity. They become intoxications when we think this is all I want, and it destroys our ability to see reality in perspective when a desire becomes blazingly intense. So naturally, because we have at least a little bit of these tendencies. And because we live in a world where these points, these things, living with such passion and achieving on the material level and accumulating, these are the values of the world. So naturally, being of the world, not completely transcendental to it, but we tend to have these desires, and we take them with us when we sit down to chant japa. So as soon as we take out our beads, the tendency of the mind is to think of all the things that it wants, all the things. If it looks to the past, lamenting the past, the mind is in the mode of ignorance. And if it's projecting itself to the future, and I want this, and as soon as this happens, this is going to happen, I'm going to have 4 of those and 12 of those and 76 of those, and my enemies will only have 42 of those, and I'll be parading down the street with 76 of them, and I will have a car, and I will put the windows dark so that everyone, when I pass by in my big black or white car with its windows dark, they'll be wondering, who is that very important person inside? And then I'll open up the door at some point and they'll see who it is. It's me. And I'll have to be wearing sunglasses also. So I'll look much more important than I am. So the mind is filled with countless desires in this way. And what I would like to say is that while we're chanting our japa, having all these desires and taking them seriously while we're chanting japa will not help our japa at all. In fact, it will get in the way of chanting japa powerfully, of connecting with Krishna, of being with Krishna while we're chanting, Abhina Tvam Namanamano. Krishna and Krishna's name, Abhina, they're the same. So we want, of course, to realize that is the stage of bhava. It's an exceptionally exalted stage. But we don't have any ability to move forward unless we come to the point where we can say and be determined about it, at least make the sincere attempt that while I'm chanting japa, it's not the time to do anything else. I should just try to be there with Krishna in the form of his holy names. Of course, kirtan also, but we're specifically speaking about japa now. Now, what does one have to do or be, or what qualities does one have to have before he can effectively do this or perfectly do this? It's very simple in one sense. If we love Krishna, if we actually have loving attachment and attraction to Krishna, then naturally our mind will move always, continuously, and only to him. But if we are in the sadhana stage, if we are practicing, therefore there will have to be, until the stage of nishto or ruchi, there'll have to be some determined work done. Practice. And practice makes perfect. So as soon as I sit down, I have to remember the tendencies of my mind. And what are those tendencies of my mind? To take sitting down and chanting japa as an opportunity to wander all over the universe on the mental level. And I have to be able to say, no, now I'm chanting japa. That determination should be there if we want to chant powerfully, that have nothing else to do now. And if there is something urgent that we have to do now, then we should do it. But when we're sitting and chanting japa, we should chant japa that means hear Krishna's holy names. In the next of the classes we'll speak a little bit more about that and still get even deeper in the third class. But for now, be determined. You won't even know that you have a wild mind until you're determined to sit there and hear the holy names of Krishna. And what form of mind will take? We could phrase that question better. What form won't the mind take? It will whisper in our ear. It will tell us anything. This is the most important thing. It has to be done now. The entire universe rests on you doing this now. And you're going to chant japa? I'm joking in a sense, but the mind really does present its concepts with that type of urgency and force, as if what it is telling you right now is the only important thing in existence. Have any of you ever had that experience? And then, in 7 seconds later, the mind can shift. And that thing is no longer important even, and something else has become the most important thing in existence. Because the mind is just being a mind. That's what the mind does. Now, just imagine for a moment if the mind was actually attracted to Krishna, and it presented Krishna to us consistently and continuously presented being with Krishna to us consistently and only as that which is valuable in existence, then our mind, bandur atma manastasya, then our mind is our friend. But practically speaking, when it does present other things to us, it's not acting as our friend. But please know that the mind's presentation of something other than chanting Krishna's names and trying our best and being determined to try our best to place our mind on Krishna's holy name, that presentation is actually a bluff. And don't, if someone is bluffing you, what's an example of someone bluffing? I know an example. Prabhupada told a story one time that there's people, there's crowds of people in Chaurangi in Calcutta. Have you been to Chaurangi Square in Calcutta? Yes. So it's a circle, I think, actually. So there's two people working together. One person is walking around and asking me, I dropped my diamond ring. Did you see it anywhere? It's so valuable. I had to give it. It was a gift. Did you see my diamond ring? I dropped it. Where is it? If you see it, I'm just here. Please, if you can find it, I'll be so relieved. It's everything to me. My mother gave it to me. If you can, it's so valuable. And then there's another person nearby who's working with him saying, you want to buy a diamond ring? It's a piece of glass. He won't say that. You want to buy a diamond ring? I'll give it to you cheap. Diamond ring? Do you want to buy a diamond ring? I have a valuable diamond ring. I'll give you the best price for it. And it's a piece of glass. They're working together. So the mind... No one left. You have to understand what it's like in this world. It's full of people bluffing. It's not actually a diamond ring. No one's laughing because this is what everyone experiences all day long, practically speaking. The mind presents something that isn't actually true. It's like the projection of an image on smoke. It looks like it's a locomotive coming down the tracks, but it's actually just smoke. It has no substance. Be determined about this point. And that when you are sitting down and chanting japa, you have nothing else to do. Be determined about this point. It is the most healthy thing you can do for your mind and your spiritual life. Prabhupada said that the best training of the mind is neglect. So this is what one has to do. One has to say, yes, it's very, very important. Yes, it's very important. Talk about me. No, I'm chanting japa. I'm chanting Krishna's names. So, determined, try it. It makes all the difference. And when your mind wanders, and it will wander because that's the nature of the mind, just bring it back. To what? To the simple attempt to try to be with Krishna by chanting his holy names and hearing. Now, what we're going to do now, why don't we open the windows and the door so we have some air in, so therefore it'll be easier to not get captured by the tiger of the mode of ignorance. The python, excuse me. So, what we'll be doing is not for a very, very long time, for a relatively short time. We're going to chant some japa. Now, while we're chanting japa, what I will do is I'll just speak some different points into the microphone. Occasionally. Just reminding us what we're here to do. To be with Krishna in the form of his holy names and to try to hear one Hare Krishna mantra. To try to give yourself to Krishna. I'll speak different things into the microphone. So while I'm speaking, don't stop and listen in the sense of taking notes and everything. Just chant, but let my words bring you back to what you're doing. And what are you doing? You have nothing else to do other than chant and try to be with Krishna. Because if you are with someone, often I'll perform this little experiment, but I'll just describe it now. If you're with someone, did you ever have a conversation with someone and you're talking to them and you're telling them something that's important to you, but their mind's completely somewhere else? Did you ever have that experience? And they're thinking of something, they're looking at their watch, they're scratching themselves, they're looking here and there, and you're talking to them, and it's something that's important to you. Now, how do you feel?
Talking for nothing,
and do you want to be with that person when they clearly don't want to be with you? No. Well, Krishna is like that too. Not that he doesn't want to be with us, but it's more like, okay, as soon as you're ready to be with me or making the attempt to be with me, I will come and be with you. Yehi tamam prapadyante tamsta taiva. That was many verses coming. Let's say it all together now. Yehi tamam prapadyante tamsta taiva. Almost. That accordingly, Krishna is going to reciprocate with us. When we come to the point of loving Krishna, he actually becomes defeated he can't reciprocate. And we're going to hear about that a little bit later in different forms. Oops, that little indicates means it's time for japa, not time for talking. Okay, everyone knows what to do. First, take shelter of your Guru Maharaj, the Vaishnava, Srila Prabhupada. Take shelter of Sisi Gonatai, Jagannath Bale, Subhadra Devi, and Radha Balava, Radha Krishna. Pray for some strength, pray for mercy, pray for the ability to chant beyond your ability. Pray that Krishna gives you the strength to want to be with him, the taste, and to neglect the other parts of our life, which are so much part of us in one sense, but actually have nothing to do with us, eternal us. And then, let's begin to chant. And just one thing all you have to do is try to chant and hear Krishna's holy name. So begin to chant. You can chant as softly, loudly as you want, quickly, slowly, whatever. Now, it's two quick 5-minute activities. One is turn to someone close to you in twos or threes and just talk about how you did, but only 5 minutes worth. Just tell how your chanting was. Just find two or three people to talk to. Go ahead, just 5 minutes. So you can all talk at the same time, no problem. Okay. Now, for 6 minutes, we will have a focus break, which means you have a break. Go outside, fill your air with your lungs with air, not your air with lungs. I need a break. You can do anything except talk to me. Except keep your mind on the fact. Don't let your mind go far away. Keep your mind. Now, can you turn the volume down from there, Prabhu? Can you turn the volume down? Before, say 10 minutes ago or so, you were sitting here in the temple room, trying your best to focus your consciousness on Krishna's name, and there's somewhat of a struggle often involved in that, because we're trying to, like, catch Krishna, and he's very elusive. But then, by our attempt, if by his mercy he turns around and grabs us, then it's very easy. By our own attempt, we can't actually capture Krishna. But by his mercy, he allows himself to be. He reveals himself to his devotees. So, what I wanted to do was speak about the person whose name we are chanting. We're chanting the names of Krishna. The name of Ram can mean Balaram, it can mean Lord Ramachandra, and it can mean Radhika Raman. For the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, in general it means Radhika Raman, name of Krishna, who's the pleasure, giving pleasure to Srimati. So we were chanting Krishna's name, and then we went outside. And then what happened when we went outside? Well, depending upon the individual, different things happen, probably. But very often, when we leave the immediate environment where we're consciously focusing our consciousness on making the conscious and determined attempt to focus our consciousness on Krishna, immediately what happens when the mind is left free, it's like a caged animal that jumps out and runs. It wants to be free, it wants to be unrestricted. But of course the material mind is restricted within the material realm. But it wants that, and there's an immediate sense of relief in one sense, which is very short-lived, in fact, because it's really only, I mean, not what was happening here particularly, but when the mind tries to taste the different flavors of the material world, it will not taste anything new. It is all pleasures that are been tasted and tasted and tasted and tasted again and again and again on the material level. It is mundane rasa, while the soul is hankering for spiritual rasa, the taste of one's relationship with Krishna. So, until Chaitanya Prabhu returns, when we'll begin the specific katha. No, I'll begin right now. Then I wanted to read from this 11th chapter of the 10th canto, which describes some very special activities of Krishna. The beginning of this 11th chapter, or the beginning verses, have to do with what happened after the Jamal Arjuna trees fell. Now, what happened before the Jamal Arjuna trees fell? Does anyone know? There's a very most famous pastime of Krishna that took place. What is the name of that pastime? The Damodar Leela. So what is this Damodar Leela? What is it in essence? That Krishna has acted in a very naughty way. Now, who is Krishna? Because if we don't have some philosophical concept in our mind of who is Krishna, until we are on the platform of love, we will misunderstand his stories, his leelas, and they are just very cute mythological Hindu tales. And the boy Krishna, he stole butter and he fed it to the monkeys. So how cute. But there's something behind that that is unlimitedly amazing. And that fact behind it is that one who steals butter is the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, Param Satyam, the Absolute Truth. In the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, raise your hand if you know the very first verse of the Bhagavatam. Does anyone know it? Begins Janma Yasyata Anvior Ares Itras Chateshu Abhigyasara. This verse defines the Absolute Truth. It describes the Absolute Truth that later Srila Vyasadeva or Sutta Goswami will say that it is Vedanti Tat Tatva Vidas Tatvam Yajyaram Adayam. It is Adam, it is non-dual. There is nothing separate from it. There is nothing external to it. The Absolute Truth is all-inclusive. It includes everything. And depending upon how we approach the Absolute Truth, the Absolute Truth will reveal himself to us depending upon how we approach that Absolute Truth. Our consciousness, depending upon our consciousness and our methodology of approaching the Absolute Truth will reveal it himself. We cannot find the Absolute Truth. We cannot see the Absolute Truth by our power. But the Absolute Truth will reveal Himself to us depending upon our methodology of approach. Everyone is like that. If I approach you and I push you, you'll push me back. If I approach very, very sweetly and in a very affectionate way, you'll respond to me in that way. The Absolute Truth is like that too. Depending upon how we approach, we see different aspects of that same non-dual Absolute Truth. So if we approach by the methodology of Gyan, which is renunciation and using the intellectual processes of discrimination, complete non-interaction with the material realm, or that's the attempt, not interacting with the world of matter. If we approach in that Jnani way, the Absolute Truth will reveal Himself as the all-pervasive Brahman. And if we approach that same Absolute Truth through meditation as yogis, that Absolute Truth will reveal how He is everywhere in the form of the Paramatma in everyone's heart. Savasya Chaham Vidyasana Visto. He's in everyone's heart, and He's in every atom, between every atom. That He is everywhere in a forearm form. The Absolute Truth will reveal Himself to us if we approach through yoga. And if we approach through bhakti, the Absolute Truth, the same Absolute Truth, will reveal Himself to us in His Bhagavan feature, as a person, His ultimate feature. Now, that person who is Krishna ultimately, he has many aspects, like every person has different aspects. Like when, raise your hand if you have that creature who known in one's life as a boss. Yes. You have a boss in your office? Yeah. So he has many aspects to his personality. And you have to be very polite when you approach your boss, and you have to be a bit like this, which is the reason why it's generally better not to have a boss, or to have only the supreme boss as your boss, because naturally when you have a boss, the mentality comes that you want to please your boss, and that can infect one's consciousness. So when one has a boss, he shows some of his nature, the efficient part of his nature, the greedy part of his nature, sometimes the angry part of his nature. But when he's at home, he shows other aspects of who he is. Because the relationship of his wife and parents and children to him are completely different. They approach him, they deal with him in a completely different way. So he shows a different part of his nature. So similarly, Krishna reveals Himself as Rajendra Kumar, as Gopinath, as Radhabalava. He reveals Himself in His Vrindavan feature if the devotees approach Him in the ways that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught and are taught in the Bhagavatam, with great spontaneous love. If they actually have spontaneous love, they just love Him. Not because He's the boss, not because He's the Supreme Lord. They love Him because He is the most sweet, all-attractive, beautiful, charming, enchanting person, and He's captured their hearts. That's the mood of their love. And even more than that, their village, they're in the same village together. The Brijbasis live in the same village as Krishna, and there's a feeling of mamata, of possessiveness. We're from the same place. village life in that way is like growing up in the same house as the person, practically speaking. When Ashok Prabhu's son Pratiki was telling me how what it was like growing up in Mumbai, in an apartment building when his son was young, and he said the atmosphere was so affectionate between all the members of the apartment building. This isn't even a village. This is in Mumbai, and these days are gone, I'm sure. But everyone's relationship was so affectionate that the doors were always open, and he and the other children would wander from one house, one apartment to the next, to the next, to the next, and everyone would feed him. And there was just complete open-hearted affection. And he said, I can't remember the exact age, he said, until I was 3 or 4 years old, I didn't know which ones were my parents. Because of it was all the affection. This was actually the one. But this is what it's like growing up in the village of Vrindavan. It's so intimate, and it's just a complete, open-hearted, spontaneous exchange of affection. So much love exists. Now, when the object of that love is the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is so beautiful. I wrote down some of Srila Rupa Goswami's descriptions of Krishna's beauty. This boy, he would wander around, and sometimes when in his Poganda age, when he was 6 years old and above that, that's when he started playing his flute. And his flute playing was so charming and so captivating. It would enter the heart through the ears. It was so captivating that when the deer, the does, the female deers, they would be grazing and chewing grass, and they would hear the sound of Krishna playing his flute, that the grass, their mouths would stop chewing. They would be stunned by that sound, and the grass would fall from their mouth. And Krishna's eyes, when he became Poganda, his eyes from Komara age, his eyes began to get longer, and they touched almost to his ears. Very beautiful. And they would glisten, and they would dance. They would move from one person to the other, capturing the attention of everyone. His eyes, his glance fell upon, and his eyebrows would move in a charming way. His eyes would glitter, they would sparkle. And he had curly locks of dark hair, and his complexion, there were three main descriptions that I saw. One, of course, is of a monsoon cloud, a darkened rain cloud, a cloud in the monsoon season. Once in Vrindavan, and only once, I saw a dark monsoon cloud, and the sun had just risen. And the beautiful sun with its morning rays was coming through that monsoon cloud. And that cloud looked so effulgent. So Krishna's darkish complexion is like an effulgent rain cloud. It has also been compared to a dark blue lotus, the color of a dark blue lotus. And also, does anyone know, is anyone a good mind reader? What's the third comparison that I'm thinking of? Does anyone happen to have a sapphire ring with them? No. Krishna's complexion is like a sapphire. It's bluish and effulgent. And wherever Krishna goes, that bluish effulgence from Krishna's transcendental body illuminates that place where he is. So when he's stealing butter, the ladies next door come to Mother Yashoda and they complain, oh, your boy, he comes in and he's wearing jewels and his jewels are effulgent and he comes in the dark of our storerooms and he steals butter and he's so clever at it. He takes a little wooden stick with a metal point and he knows which pots have butter and yogurt and he pokes the clay pots until it opens up and there's a hole and it comes pouring out and then he goes underneath and then he brings the next friend and then he brings the next friend and they say to Mother Yashoda and they say as Mother Yashoda says, oh, I'll take away his jewels so he won't be able to see. And they say, that won't do any good at all because his effulgence lights up the room with this sapphire beautiful light. And when Krishna's in the forest, his effulgence lights up the forest. So Krishna is all attractive and everyone in Vrindavan, their consciousness is fully on Krishna. They're thinking about him naturally and spontaneously, continuously, out of great love. So, the Damodar Leela occurred. It's hard to know where to begin talking about this pastime, or the 11th chapter. We can just say that the Damodar Leela occurred. And then, after Krishna was tied up, Mother Yashoda took all the boys and they said, you stand around Krishna. Do you know why Mother Yashoda tied up Krishna? Well, I can tell you. It's because he was so angry at her that he said, if you punish me, I'm going to go into the forest. I'm going to run away into the forest. And I'm never going to return. He's 3 years old. He's so angry. Mother Yashoda is thinking, this boy is so restless. So she tied him up so he wouldn't run into the forest. He's the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can something within the universe, a piece of rope, circumscribe, go around his belly, because the rope, the whole is always greater than the parts, and the part is the rope, and the universe is greater than the parts, and so many universes come from Krishna, so Krishna is unlimitedly vast, and yet Mother Yashoda was able to tie him, but we don't want to just tell the whole Damodar Leela right now, and then she said, okay, now you be good and you stand around, all the boys stand around Krishna so he doesn't do anything more naughty. They all say, yes, Mom. And then Krishna's crying and crying and crying and then Balaram comes. Who did this to you? Balaram says. I will destroy that person. Who has done this to you? Mother Yashoda. Oh. Balaram was very obedient to Mother Yashoda. And he said, Krishna, why are you always stealing and doing so many naughty things? You cut your... So he wouldn't untie her. So he was crying and crying. Balaram went away. And then, as soon as there was no one there, Krishna started laughing and playing. And he dragged the mortar this way and this way. And this way, and this way. But he wouldn't untie himself because Mother Yashoda's affection was so strong that he couldn't untie that rope. Her bhakti, her love for him was so strong. So he pulled it this way and that way, and when Mother Yasoda had been collecting rope to tie him, so many of the ladies in the village of Vrindavan, they went and got the ropes from their house because she needed more and more and more. And they were taking the ropes that were tied up their hair. And to every lady whose house had contributed some of the ropes, Krishna brought the mortar there and told the boys to go inside and steal butter. This little boy, so charming. And then he went between the trees, the Jamaladun trees. And the trees came crashing down, and we know out came Nalakuvera Manigriva. And one would think that it's quite wonderful that the trees fell down, but the rope didn't break. Because again, that rope was Mother Yasoda's affectionate contribution to the pastime. So then, trees falling down, and everyone in Vrindavan is doing their service, they're doing their work, their daily work in the pasturing grounds, and suddenly a huge sound of the trees falling, crashing down, and everyone hears that. And then after some time, they're thinking, after some time, because for one muhurta, they're stunned, and they cannot move, because they're thinking, where was that sound from? It was that direction. That's where Krishna is. Oh no! Krishna might be hurt! So they were running there in complete anxiety. Krishna, Krishna. Because this comes out later, one of the wife of Upananda, Nanda Maharaj's elder brother, she said to Upananda that it is the nature of prema that one experiences fear. According to the amount of love one has, one will fear for the welfare of one's beloved. So everyone in Vrindavan feared something has happened to Krishna. Those trees fell down with a loud crash. And they went running there. And they saw the boys, a few boys around Krishna. And they too were stunned. And they looked, and they just saw trees, and they couldn't see Krishna.
It did not fix sound.
And then nothing happened to the deer. I guess we can close the window. There was no damage. Could you just check? Whose nittai is it? Who's going to tie? When you put the crowns, make sure they're okay. And apologize for being careless. Ooh, only by the grace of Nittai. See, when there's a little disaster, even a little disaster, a little difficulty, why don't we move it over further away from the deities? Doesn't look actually look appropriate to hold up in that wide. Could you move it away from the deities? As long as it's right in front of the deities, now I'm in anxiety. They okay? Okay, we'll adjust the screen. Okay. As soon as there's a difficulty, where does one's mind run? Usually, first to ourself. I'm okay. And then it's just natural. And then our beloveds. The resonance of Vrindavan their consciousness only ran in one direction, and that was to Krishna. There was no question of thinking of oneself even. Mother Yashoda, she would have been prepared to die 1,000 deaths to protect Krishna from one drop of perspiration that would inconvenience him. This is Vrindavan. It's not of this world. It's not a clever story even. It's the spiritual realm where everyone loves Krishna fully and completely. And because of their full and complete love for Krishna, they have captured the Supreme Personality to such a degree that he allows themselves to be bound and controlled by them. The Supreme Swatantra, independent personality of Godhead. Remember again at this point that the unlimited universes, and universes are big. Just look. Our minds don't go there. At night, see the stars, the planets. Universes are incalculably big and unlimitedly incalculably big universes come from Krishna, Mama Angsa Teja, and this is just a little bit of his potency. And there, Mother Yashoda is binding him with rope. And he's crying. And he's stealing butter. And then the two trees fall down. And the resonance of Vrindavan, it is not that they don't know that he's the Supreme Lord, but they don't even care that he's the Supreme Lord. That's even more amazing. Their love for him overpowers their gyan, their knowledge of his position. They are aware, but that feeling of awe and reverence that comes from knowing that he's the Supreme Lord, that your destiny is in his hands, is completely overwhelmed by their love for him, their spontaneous and natural love for him. So the trees have fallen, and Nanda Maharaj runs over with the greatest anxiety and can't see Krishna anywhere. And then through the branches of the fallen trees, he sees Krishna. And Krishna looks frightened. He sees his father and he looks frightened. Why? He's just stolen all that butter and everything. His mother has tied him up. And he's feeling very self-righteous. I didn't do anything wrong. But then his father is there. And Nanda Maharaj looks at Krishna and just smiles. Because he thought there are so many demons around. And Krishna was in such a frightening situation, and a tree has even fallen. We don't even know how this tree has fallen, why it has fallen. It wasn't eaten by white ants, termites, or anything. It wasn't right, and no lightning had come, and the tree had fallen. And Krishna looks so frightened. Let me smile and reassure him. Because he doesn't want to say, oh, are you okay? Did any demon, but he doesn't want to bring inauspiciousness in by speaking of negative elements. So he just smiles at Krishna. And when Krishna sees his father smiling, then Krishna smiles. He's not going to chastise me for stealing the butter and knocking down the trees and everything. And then there's amazing, wonderful pastimes that blossom from this pastime, like beautiful flowers blossom from a malati vine, a jasmine vine. But then Nanda Maharaj says to Krishna, she sees that he's tied up with rope. And he says to Krishna, who tied you? Who tied you? No, who tied you, Krishna? Mother Yasoda. not with that voice. And Nanda Maharaj became angry at Yasoda for this little offense. Okay, he stole a little butter, but you're risking his life. But he smiled anyway, but inside he was angry. That mother Krishna, he thought, Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says, whose lap you prefer to mine, she is the one who's tied you up in this way. Oh. So he picks up Krishna and hugs him, and Krishna hugs him around the neck, and just the sweet rasa that's being exchanged there. This is Vrindavan. And Krishna is forgetting that he's the unlimited Supreme Lord. The love of the Brijbasis, it compresses his consciousness. He forgets that he's Savagya Krishna who knows everything. And he's just acting, reciprocating with their love. So, then there's an exchange. So this is at the beginning of the 11th chapter, the first few verses of the 11th chapter, because the 10th chapter describes, the 9th chapter of the 10th canto describes the Damodar Lila, the 10th chapter describes the falling of the two trees, and the 11th chapter describes after the trees fall what happens next. So the first few verses, could we stop that slide? Could you put on those foresty sounds now, but very softly. Okay, go to the first slide. Yes. Next. Yes. In Gokul, this happened in Mahavan Gokul. The Jamala Jun trees had fallen and one muhurta of time had passed. And then the pastimes that we just heard occurred. Okay, next one. And then the topic changes to something that happened previously. But there's a specific intent for Sukadeva to speak this. The gopis would say, when Krishna was very, very young, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. By saying these words or by clapping their hands, and they would tell Krishna, sing loudly, Krishna. Oh, you're dancing so nicely. Actually, Krishna was dancing as like a little boy dances. I don't know if you've seen this. Sometimes the little children, they dance this way and this way, and it looks so cute, but they're not expert dancers. But everyone, all the gopis, this is the elderly gopis, they wanted to encourage Krishna in this way, and they would bribe him, oh, give you a sweet, Krishna, dance, 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 we want to see you dance. They would clap their hands, sing, Krishna, sing. And Krishna would dance. And he would sing. Next. This is the next verse. Could you turn on the sound a little bit too? At such times as this, and this actually happened when Krishna was if you double click it, it should go in. Yeah. Okay. At such times, this is when Krishna was inside, although he was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead. He was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead. And still, he would smile and dance according to their desire, as if he were a wooden doll in their hands. They would control him because Krishna is controlled by the love of the devotees. He reciprocates. He reciprocates with the mood that the devotee approaches him. So when we're chanting our japa, if we have no mood of approaching Krishna, and if our interest is clearly something else and somewhere else, Krishna won't be controlled by us. He won't reveal himself to us. He won't show his form. He won't show his pastimes. He won't show his qualities. We are turning our back on Krishna, and we're thinking, why isn't Krishna in front of me? Why can't I see Krishna? Why can't I be with Krishna? But our back is to Krishna. That's why we can't see him. So what we're trying to do by practicing our sadhana bhakti is turn to Krishna. That is the purpose of sadhana bhakti. To enact the great turning of the soul from away from Krishna, bhogavanchakari, trying to enjoy, towards turning towards Krishna. So when we're chanting and just accepting that I have nothing else to do right now other than to be with Krishna in the form of his holy names, this is our attempt to be with Krishna, doing our part in the relationship. And here, the Vrijbasis, the perfection of that relationship. Maybe open one of those. They are in the perfection of that relationship. Not only do they have a relationship, but they have Krishna completely under their control. Their love for him is so intense. Sometimes he would sing very loudly at their bidding. They would request, sing, Krishna. And in this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. So we saw in the last chapter, in chapter 10, how Krishna was under the control of his mother, tied up tied up, bound by his mother. The trees fell down, but the rope of her affection could not be broken by Krishna. But not only was Krishna under the control of his mother, he was under the control of all the Vrijbasis. Completely under the control, Sukadeva Goswami is saying. Next. Sometimes Mother Yasoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, bring this article, bring that article. Sometimes they would ask him to bring the shoes, the wooden shoes that Nanda Maharaj would use while he was worshipping his deity. Or sometimes bring that, and they would give Krishna ever increasingly heavy things to do to see how strong he was. Krishna, bring that book. And Krishna would bring it as if he was a little boy. And then he would pound his arms, see how he would put his arms in the air, see how strong I am, I can carry. Sometimes he would carry things against his soft belly, and there's Krishna, remember, he's effulgent. Srila Rupa Goswami describes that his effulgence crushes the pride of ground sapphire. If you take valuable sapphires and ground them up into it, they're beautifully effulgent powder. Krishna's effulgence makes those appear to be insignificant. And there, this most beautifully attractive boy, who's unlimitedly powerful, has captured the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. And yet, he's completely under their control. This is rasa. This is the taste, the juice that everyone is hankering for. Every soul is hankering for this in a relationship. Next. Same verse still. Sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot. And Krishna, when thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, as if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there because he was so little still and the things were too heavy for him. But just to invite the pleasure of his relatives, he would strike his body with his arms to show, I'm not weak, I'm strong. He was in the mood of a little boy, Balak. Because these residents of Vrindavan, their only desire was to love him, the absolute truth, as a little boy. And he perfectly reciprocated. Their desire was fixed and focused. They loved Krishna in that way, and Krishna reciprocated and loved them. Okay? Next. Now, why is Krishna performing these pastimes? This very wonderful verse. Dashayam stad vidam loka.
Dashayam stad vidam loka.
Atmano vrityavashyatam.
Atmano vrityavashyatam.
Vrajasyo vahavai harsham.
Vrajasyo vahavai harsham.
Bhagavan balachestitaha.
Bhagavan balachestitaha.
So Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, he's acting as a little boy, but yet he is Bhagavan. Balachestitaha. He's performing these activities like a little boy. Why? Darshayam tadvidam loka. He wanted those great souls, such as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, who were worshipping him with great awe and reverence as the Supreme Lord. He wanted to show them, Atmano, how the Supreme Lord, Britya Vashyata, becomes completely controlled. He wanted to show him how the Supreme Lord becomes completely controlled by the love of the devotees. And therefore, he performed these pastimes. And in doing so, he gave the Brijbasis the highest limit of ecstatic happiness, which gives him the highest limit of happiness. Just going back to that example of the boss, someone is in the office and the boss is there and everyone's nice to the boss and saying all nice things to him, at least in front of his face, and smiles. When you see the boss in the morning, you smile. You have to smile when you see the boss first thing in the morning. But the boss knows that these type of relationships are only because he's the boss and everyone's paycheck depends upon him. So that there is no question of actual true love and affection being the driving force of the relationship. So the smile is only on the level of the face. It is not coming from the love of the heart, from within the heart. They don't love their boss. No one loves their boss. But yet everyone smiles. But it is only superficial. So Krishna wants to show by these activities the extent or the power of bhakti. How powerful love for him is, it can completely place him under their control. He wants to teach something to the most exalted devotees within the universe. And that is about the residents of Vrindavan. He wants to teach them about them and their style of worship. And this is what Mahaprabhu is revealing. Krishna, in the form of Mahaprabhu, has opened up the secrets of his heart and distributed them. Who knows the deepest secrets in your heart? You don't. No one goes around and just talks about them. The deepest secrets in the heart, we keep deepest secrets. But sometimes, when our heart is overflowing, we'll talk about things that are very, very deep and dear to us, to qualified people. So in this way, Mahaprabhu, Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani, his heart overflowing with love for Krishna in separation, distributed this most secret thing through Srila Rupa Goswami. This is Rathayatra pastime, so much described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But this is the secret of why he's performing these pastimes on the tattva level. Next, here's the translation. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, meaning that's the tadarshanam vidam, the great exalted devotees on the level of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. So take this concept and let it be in your consciousness and coat to some degree your chanting of japa. And what's the first thing that you think of? If you're chanting and trying to hear and you're watching your mind go here and there, interested in thousands and millions of other things, but having very little interest in Krishna, what's the first thought that comes to the mind to you, to the other sincere person? Oh, no one will answer that now, because I said, what's the thought that comes to the mind of a sincere person? And then if you answered, it means you're a sincere person. Okay, what's the first thought that comes to your mind, regardless of whether you're sincere or not? What comes to your mind? Here, Krishna is conquered by the devotees' love, and here I am chanting. Okay, if no one's going to answer and be stubborn, I'm going to get stubborn too. Okay, what's the first thought that comes to your mind on this? Krishna must be bored when I'm chanting. But take it to the point of view of you and your consciousness.
Better chant nicely.
Better chant nicely, yes.
Long, long way to go.
Huh? Long way to go. Have a long way to go. And how... Go ahead, more. I want to hear, but what comes to your mind when you think about this? Yes.
How lucky I am.
How lucky I am. I guess there are just many individuals. Different things come to different people's mind. How, this is all wonderful. Every one of them wonderful. Anyone else? Yes.
Just here.
Just here. Take my step, what I can actually do, what's in my power. Yes?
How would I develop love for Krishna? I'm so falling.
Yeah, I'm
after
so...
so much, I'm still not developing that love.
And what is that called? That mood,
humility.
So, looking at Vrindavan, reflecting back on my own lack of bhakti, humility begins to take its birth. And Mahaprabhu said, "Kirtaniya Sadhari." This where this humility. This verse which describes humility, wear it around your neck like a garland. Let it decorate you. Let humility decorate your consciousness while you chant. And then what's the next step after humility? Anyone like to say? Someone said something, but I couldn't see.
Tolerance.
Tolerance, okay. Why is one tolerant? But say with chanting now. And suddenly I actually realize that I'm so far away. You know, and someone says to me, how long have you been a devotee? And I say, oh, 4 years. Without understanding or remembering that I'm not very much of a devotee at all. How long have you been a devotee? Oh, in about 500 or 600 lifetimes, I think. So what's the next step after that? And this will be the topic of the third class. What's the next step? Yes! What capacity do I have? How do I go from being a low beggar to even requesting for the association of billionaires? How does a beggar get into the presence of billionaires? What to speak of become a billionaire? Can only be some mercy. And where do I turn to mercy? I let that feeling of, oh Krishna, unless you are merciful to me, what hope do I have? Let that coat the chanting, infuse the chanting. That this is actually the third class we move to. Okay. Next, I'll just continue and then continue here. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Mujbasis by his childhood activities. Next. We'll tell, now, this is the pastime of Krishna and the fruit seller. The Adivasi fruit seller who had a Pulindi in Vrindavan. She lived in a village very close to where Krishna was living. And she had a basket, a leaf basket, of fruits that she carried. And this is how actually everyone in Vrindavan heard about Krishna and his activities, because these the fruit sellers, the pan sellers, the this sellers and that sellers, they would go from one village to another and they would say that Krishna's done this and Krishna's done that and Krishna's done that, because everyone in Vrindavan, their consciousness was absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, hearing about him, speaking about him, seeing him, because he's all attractively beautiful. So this fruit seller, young lady or lady, came and she began walking through the town calling out, "Please buy your fruits for me. Please buy your fruit for me. Fruits, fruits, fresh fruits here." One of the fruits that was mentioned that she had was pilu fruit. I've never seen them, but because I've never been in Vrindavan, there are pilu trees around Govardhan especially, and they survive and when there's not very much water, and they hang down and make little canopies that give cooling shade during the warm season. They hang down very humbly to the ground. So she had some pilu fruits and other fruits, and she was walking out, and then she saw a little boy who had an effulgence like sapphires and had the most charming smile and darkish hair, and was clothed, dressed by the four directions only. Whose hands were reddish pinkish, and his feet soles were pinkish, and had the most charming smile, and eyes that were shaped like lotus petals. And she saw him. And he had heard her calling out, "Who wants to buy my fruit? Come and buy my fruit." And this little boy saw some grains on the ground, and he picked them up, and he began walking to her, because he had seen the village people barter for fruit. And as he was walking in his little hands, the grains were falling out, and she saw him like walking like a flowing stream of amrita, of nectar. What it would be like to see little Krishna walking. And she was completely captivated. So he said, "Give me fruit," in broken talk. And he tried to hand her the grains, and there was nothing there, practically speaking. And she was captivated. And she said, "Put out your hands like this." And she showed him how to put his hands together so she could put fruits in his hand, because all the grains had come through his palm, so he didn't know how to hold anything. "So put your hands together like this." Perhaps she even took his hands and put them together so he could hold it. "Well, keep them here." And she started putting fruits in his hands. And he became, because she was so attracted to him, he became greedy for fruits more and more and more. But he only had little hands. But his Aishwarya Shakti, because Krishna's Shaktis serve him. So his Aishwarya Shakti, his potency of opulence, expanded his ability to carry fruit as she kept putting more and more fruit in his hands until her basket was empty. And she was just... And then he And what is it? And Dina Bandhu tells that little story. What is that one?
She said to him,
because she loved him. Her heart was completely softened and melted in love for this little charming, enchanting boy whose movements flowed like a stream of nectar. She said to him,
sit on my knee and call me mother.
Ma.
And
so Krishna, so she was in this Vatsalya mood came to her heart. So she just had a cherished desire that he sit on her knee and call him Ma.
And Krishna looked around.
Because she was from the Palindi caste, she was an Adivasi, and none of, she didn't want anyone to see, so he looked around.
And she just was saying, he called me mother. And then she was just saying, he called me mother, he called me mother. And she wandered off.
So she went off. Or rather, Krishna went off. And she just watched him. He wanted, because she was carrying all this fruit with him. And his mother was inside. So then the Adivasi lady went off. Krishna had filled her basket with jewels and gems, and she didn't notice. She didn't care. But she went off because she wanted to give her the money that she had collected to her family back there. That was her duty, so she went back. But all she could think about was that boy. She went back stunned. Krishna went inside and he saw his mother and he pulled on her sari. All. And then he took all the fruit and he took her sari out, the top part of her sari. What, not, she wasn't wearing a sari, but what she, it was like a... Yes, Allah. And he put all the fruits in there and tied it up as best he could and smiled. And Mother Yasoda said, where did you get these from? He said, oh, one lady outside gave them to me, he said in broken language. She said, you know, you can't trust everyone outside just like you can trust all the people in the house. And he said, who shouldn't I trust? I don't know what is not, who not to trust. Who should I trust? Who should I not trust? So in this way, Mother Yasoda was completely charmed. Krishna was completely charmed. The Adivasi lady was completely charmed, and not only did she get the treasure of jewels, she got the treasure of prema for Krishna. So not only is Krishna controlled by the love of his mother and the other residents of Vrindavan, but also everyone there. Now the next pastime is also really amazing. But we'll leave that one for... Oh, yes. Once a woman selling fruit was calling, oh, inhabitants of Brajabhumi, if you want to purchase some fruits, come here. Upon hearing this, Krishna immediately took some grains and went to barter as if he needed some fruits. Our acharyas say, he is the one that gives the fruit of everyone's activity. And yet he wants fruits. He was greedy for the fruits of those who offer them with prema, with love. Next. And while Krishna was going to the fruit vendor very hastily, most of the grains he was holding fell. Nonetheless, The fruit vendor filled Krishna's hands with fruits, and a fruit basket was immediately filled with jewels and gold. I remember when we were young devotees, when we would go around to businessmen to collect, we would always tell them this story. That if you give some little bit of fruits, something like that, your basket will be filled with jewels. That was the hidden meaning. But actually, she didn't care about these jewels because she had achieved the highest jewel. She had love for Krishna. What wealth is more valuable than that? Okay. Okay, so we'll start here later. So why don't you turn this one off? Now, let's see. Now, what I would like you to do is only one thing at once. That means try to chant japa and hear Krishna's name. You have nothing else to do now. But if the thought naturally comes, just try and hear. But if the thought naturally comes, oh Krishna, I am so far away. Let me chant nicely, Krishna. Please give me some mercy. Let me serve you. If those kind of thoughts naturally come, well, let them naturally come. And let them infuse your chanting. Not two separate thoughts, but just like when Mother Yashoda, and we'll hear it soon, she'll be calling Krishna's name. There's only one thing going on. She's calling Krishna, but her mood of love fills her calling. So if the mood of Krishna, please accept me, I am your servant, fills your chanting naturally, how nice. And then your hearing will be still more intense and improved. Okay, so let us chant some japa. Same thing, you can take a moment to breathe if you like and get some fresh air in your lungs. But make the determination now. If you don't start at that point, from my experience, japa is very hard to do. Then I have nothing else to do. Start with that point. I have nothing else to do now other than to be with Krishna, to make my attempt to turn to Krishna, to be with Krishna, to face him, not insult him, but to be with him in the form of his holy names by making my humble attempt to hear. Okay, please beg for some mercy before you begin, and then just begin to chant. And when I'll speak, but just let that speaking remind you, as opposed to let it help your chanting. That's my hope. Okay. So take a little of this mood. See if you can catch a little of the mood that we were just reading about and bring that into your calling for that very attractive boy to give you some mercy.